This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, it's Friday, 5th of August, and it's just gone past 7:06 in the morning. And as usual, we have in front of me Keith Kam and I'm Wong Shaoning, and we are The Morning Run. Now, in half an hour, we'll be speaking to Thilan Vikramasingam from Maybank Investment Banking Group Research, giving us an outlook on ASEAN banks and a bit of a channel check in terms of how the broad economy is doing in this region. But let's recap how global markets ended yesterday.
Yeah, on Wall Street, the US markets, they kind of looked flat-ish. The Dow ended 0.3% lower. The S&P 500 was down 0.1%, but the Nasdaq was up 0.4%. In Asian markets earlier in the day, it was pretty much a green day. The Nikkei was up 0.7%. Hong Kong's Hang Seng was up 2%. Shanghai's Composite Index was up 0.8%. Over in Singapore, the STI was up 0.6%. And the FBM KLCI soared 1.2% at the end of the day.
Yeah, and we are currently above 1,500 levels, 1,507 points.
Nice.
So, but to find out what's moving markets, we speak to Carlos Casanova, Senior Economist at UBP. Good morning, Carlos. As usual, always good to speak to you on a Friday. Now, US Treasuries have been volatile in the last few weeks, but a trend has emerged, and that is the deepening of the inversion of the yield curve. It's actually the most since August 2020 for the 10-year note against the 2-year note. Are traders right in assuming that a recession is inevitable versus the Fed narrative that it will be a soft landing? Who's right?
That's correct. So we have seen significant yield curve inversion in the past few weeks. I think especially, after the last Fed meeting that pretty much anchored 2-year yields at a slightly higher rate and the prospect of a recession in the US, even the prospect of a potential military confrontation that would drag on economic activity this week, that sort of exerted significant downside pressure on the 10-year yield. So now we're in a situation where this inversion is very clear. And of course, almost every single time that the US yield curve has inverted, the US economy enters a recession. It's just a matter of when. So typically, that it can happen in a range of between 6 and up to, I believe, 24 months. So it's a little bit wide. This time around, however, the yield curve inversion is coinciding with an inflection in some of the main activity indicators. We are seeing the ISM or the manufacturing PMI numbers start to come down. In particular, there's a leading indicator that we like, which is new export orders minus inventories. That is signaling that there will be a contraction in manufacturing activity, at least sooner rather than later, maybe as soon as next month. So it is possible that markets are moving to price in not only a recession in the U.S., but also a sooner than expected recession in the U.S. And although the Fed has not completely changed its narrative on this subject, we are seeing some signs that they are sort of moderating their tone a little bit and preparing for whatever lies ahead.
Hey, Carlos, I just want to pick your brains about the Bank of England's overnight rate hike, 1.7 to 1.75%. That's a 50 basis point hike and the fastest in 27 years. What are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, it's definitely the fastest in 20-something years. It was widely expected, as the Bank of England has been signaling its commitment to reduce inflation expectations, anchor inflation expectations going forward. I would say the pace of monetary policy tightening is probably going to decline slightly in the coming months. Of course, it all depends on what happens with US CPI in August and July and August, and then the reaction of the Fed in September and going forward. But we do expect that any upcoming interest rate hikes might be slowed. In other words, the Bank of England knows that there is a period of weaker economic activity that lies ahead. They want to have a credible chance at anchoring, to some extent, inflation expectations in the country. And so they have decided to front load a lot of that monetary policy tightening to this month, because they have a window of opportunity here. So they've done an outsized interest rate hike. There's going to be some temporary upside pressure on the pound But the key word is temporary. I think going forward, the whole sort of inflation and slower growth and the Fed, that kind of narrative that has dominated the US dollar, British pound cross in the past few months will kind of come back into the picture, and we will see further weakness on the pound.
Now, Carlos, I want to talk about other Asian central banks in this region. So like India and Thailand, they have preferred to draw on their forex reserves to shore up local currencies instead of raising rates. Is this a wise move, or will it drain crucial reserves when they need it most?
Yes. So in Asia, we are seeing this quite big shift in monetary policy, especially emerging market central banks have implemented bigger than expected monetary policy tightening in the past few weeks to, of course, control inflation. But many of them have a mandate to also stabilize the foreign exchange. So, you know, there is a lot of pressure to manage those two objectives, and they're using a variety of tools. The good news is that in terms of fundamentals, we are in a significantly better place. There's a lot of concern about you know, the region and debt and whether it's going to be another Asian financial crisis. The good news is the fundamentals are much better. For example, in the case of India, FX reserves are equivalent to 10 months of imports. And of course, the level that the consensus considers is safe for FX reserves is 3 months of imports. So they have a little bit of wiggle room there, and they are using the wiggle room. But it's not going to be enough, so they will inevitably also have to do additional rate hikes. The point here is, you know, can they afford to do slower or smaller increments in the next few meetings, and then use the FX reserves as buffer to try to smooth out the impact of the rate hike? So I think in the case of India, they are doing it, but there is a question of opportunity cost. So of course that is not going to be enough to offset the pressure on the rupee, given everything that's happening with the dollar. There are cost push as well as demand pull factors of inflation, and central banks only have control over the demand pull factors of inflation. So India is utilizing its FX reserves to smooth the impact of its interest rate cuts. But is it worth it, given that you know, it's not going to prevent the inevitable, which is inflation to remain high and the rupee to continue to depreciate. So I think for the time being, it's not an issue, but the central bank might run into problems in a few months, you know, once it becomes clear that that is not a strategy for the long term.
So India's neighbors, Pakistan and Bangladesh, they are looking for funds from the IMF. And then we know Sri Lanka has defaulted on sovereign borrowings. Is this sort of a rumbling that should be a concern for the region, this kind of debt crisis that South Asia is facing?
Yes, the debt crisis rumblings are quite interesting, in fact. Sri Lanka, of course, defaulted on its debt for the first time since ever, I think. The conventional wisdom says that, you know, most of the Asian countries have experienced an improvement in their fundamentals. For example, the figures on FX reserves that I just mentioned, but also in terms of debt to GDP, the numbers are more reasonable than they were back in the 90s. And so any potential risk of contagion to the region is contained. Now, that is certainly true on the fundamental front. The problem is that there is another factor at play here that wasn't as prominent in 1997, which is everything that's happening with the Fed, US dollar, and depreciatory pressure on Asian FX. So, for example, the Sri Lankan rupee is down 43.8% year to date. That makes it the worst performer in Asia by far. But we are seeing similar pressure in Pakistan with minus 25.5%. India, Bangladesh, which have also come under scrutiny recently, not so bad. In fact, we are looking at minus 9% for Bangladesh and minus 6% for the Indian rupee. So in fact, they're not the worst performing currencies, and they're not the worst performing markets. But naturally, given that there is a conversation around some of these other countries within South Asia, which is, of course, a very diversified region, markets are starting to worry whether there's going to be any spillover risk. But in my opinion, you know, it's mostly contained, but it's going to be interesting given that the US dollar dynamic is playing such a strong role this time around.
All right. Thank you for your time. That was Carlos Casanova, senior economist at UBP. It's going to be a tough time ahead for central bankers. U.S. currency still remains very strong and looks like a recession is here, according to fixed income traders, because of the inverted yield curve. But turning our attention to some corporate results that came out from U.S. last night. First off is Lyft. Now, Lyft, Uber's partner in crime, well, enemy, frenemy, is that what we'll call it? Now, they generated the highest adjusted EBITDA in the company's history, at $79 million, far surpassing the $18 million average estimate in a Bloomberg survey. Revenue rose 30% year-on-year to $991 million.
It also saw active riders grow 12% from last year to 19.9 million. And this is the highest number of riders since the pandemic began, which it's actually quite interesting seeing that. Well, I guess everybody's back to work and needing lifts?
Yes, literally, lifts. If you look at Wall Street, there are 26 buys on this, 16 holds, no sells. Consensus target price for this stock is $33.41. It closed at $17.39. It was up 68 cents yesterday. Now, another company reporting, which is also new economy, somewhat tech stock, is DoorDash. Well, they're like a bit like a delivery of a tapao, you know, sending you tapaos. Well,
these are companies that really came into the forefront because of the pandemic, actually.
Yeah, they existed before the pandemic and they did really well during the pandemic. The question is, will they continue to do well as we are actually going out to eat more, right? But actually, their results were better than expected because the shares popped 18% in after-hours trading. Revenue did grow 30% year-on-year to $1.6 billion, higher than analyst expectations of $1.52 billion, thanks to increased order frequency and more monthly active users.
Total number of orders DoorDash delivered grew 23% year-over-year to 426 million. That's an all-time high. I think people are actually ordering into the office now for lunch.
They don't want to go out.
No. Or they live at the office. That's so sad.
Are you talking about us? But if you look at the street, 16 buys, 13 holds, no sells. Consensus target price for this stock is $105. Yesterday, the stock closed up $1.86. It's $81.36. And for those who love Beyond Meat, very quickly, reported 1.6% drop in net sales to $147 million was actually below street expectations. But up next, we'll be taking a look at coastal erosion. Keep it here, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.